Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This is episode 170. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I have been riding a small growth wave at Recapture Now for three straight months. And we've had a record month this month. So, I mean, just like when the lows make you want to just crawl under a rock and die, I'm riding a high right now where I feel like I could jump on a hang glider that's been ripped and totally MacGyver it to the ground, you know?
That's great, man. Congratulations. Do you know, are you pointing to anything other than just like you've been doing a lot of the good stuff for a while now? Or is there a particular kind of lever that you've pulled recently to kind of show that growth?
Well, see, I would like to believe that there's some magic thing that I've been doing that's just infinitely more innovative than anything else that's out there. But the truth be told, none of those things are true.
Yeah,
all of my stuff has been pretty steady. I haven't done a lot of major changes except for one thing. And this is going to go flying in the face of the hashtag charge more folks. I actually lowered my prices.
I like it.
I have a new plan that is a lower priced plan at $29 a month instead of $49 a month. And with the introduction of that at the beginning of April, I have seen a significant uptick of new users. We also changed the basis of the plan so that it's now charge based. So the more you earn back in your store, the higher that price goes. Before it was fixed based on the number of emails. And I've always hated that. Was always kind of waiting for the right event to do it. But with the cart hook integration that we completed at the beginning of this month, we were pretty much ready to go with that.
Yeah.
So I put that in place, lowered the prices, changed it to charge-based pricing, opened the floodgate, and I haven't really gone and announced it or done anything public. It's just I'm getting organic, natural stuff coming off of the App Store. And I've asked people, so how did you find us? Oh, I found you in the App Store. Yeah. Our rank hasn't changed. Nothing really has changed. Like, they're not finding me off of Google. They didn't suddenly, you know, figure anything out. I mean, there's been a little bit of fallout with MailChimp and Shopify, but I've only heard one customer out of however many that have signed up for paid accounts this month. One of them said they were looking for an alternative to MailChimp. But everybody else just said they found us in the App Store. And I haven't even done anything to optimize our listing to say, hey, we're a MailChimp alternative or MailChimp replacement. I probably should have. It's too late now. But because everybody else has done it. But
Yeah.
I mean, I'm writing that. And now that we are integrated with Carthook, the first email has gone out. I'm seeing a few of those customers. But this growth isn't even driven off of that yet.
That's awesome, man.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to start the hashtag charge less movement.
I think it's...
I know. I'm just being sarcastic about that.
I love charge more, right? Like, charge more really means, like, have a better product, right? It doesn't mean just charge more and be an ass about, like, charging more just because you control the pricing page. And I think, like, what you've done is charge the appropriate amount in the metric that has the most value to your customers, right? So you have said, we're going to charge based on recovered revenue, which makes all the fucking sense in the world. That's what your thing does. So that makes sense that it's the thing that you charge on. And you're lowering the barrier to entry for people to get started with you. And they can grow naturally with you, right? So I would just assume that you have a decent amount of like expansion revenue built in, because as people's stores get bigger, they get more successful, they naturally cover more revenue with you, and your bill to them goes up, right?
Yeah, it's got expansion revenue built in, so that's fantastic. As people's stores grow, we grow with them. That's all good. But I would actually say that the alignment of my pricing has less to do with what you specifically mentioned, and I can't remember your exact words, but I was thinking when you said that it had less to do with that and more to do with the fact that, you know, most of my growth is coming from Shopify right now. And their bottom tier plan is $29 a month. So if you charge more than the bottom tier plan for a marketplace like Shopify, or a platform like Shopify, I should say, then it's harder for them to justify the value of what you provide.
Yeah.
Compared to the platform that they're on.
Yeah.
And I saw my other competitors on there. A lot of them have a bottom tier of 29. And at first I thought, it's too damn low. It's too low. How can you make any money off of that? And the truth is they're making money hand over fist because people are like, oh, I'm paying 29 for Shopify. I can pay 29 for this if they do this, you know. But yeah. If you say I'm paying 29 for Shopify, I don't want to pay 49 for this. I've had people tell me that my 49 price is too expensive compared to others on the platform. So there's definitely price resistance at 49. There's no question about it. Yeah. And the fact that turning it off and turning on the 29 has created a small flood of customers this month is further proof that I think 49 was too high.
So So just to clarify, you're saying that the price sensitivity is relative to the price that someone has to pay to run a shop on Shopify. And so they're benchmarking you against, I have to pay Shopify $29 just to exist on Shopify. I can't go pay more than my store cost to run on Shopify for an add-on to it, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And so this is why you want, like, for example, I know a lot of plugin app store owners want to push up into the Shopify Plus tier because that's like $179 a month, I think. Maybe $199. I don't remember what. It's three figures. I mean, it's definitely higher. And you get a lot more for a Shopify Plus account. But when you're at that level, A, your store is much more successful. You want all the features that they have on Shopify Plus, specifically because they're supporting things that you can't get at the lower levels and you need them.
Yep.
But that usually means your store is making five, six, seven figures. I mean, Shopify Plus is where they have the Kylie Jenners and the Chubbies and all the other big brand names that they have on Shopify. Chubby Shorts. I'm not kidding, man. Look it up. They have some great abandoned cart emails, by the way.
Oh, that's great.
They do, which is why I ended up studying them. But yeah, I mean, all of these stores are on the Shopify Plus plan. So when you're at $179 a month, all of a sudden charging $99 a month, you're like, yeah, that's cheap. Sure, whatever.
Yep.
But starting with $99 and somebody's paying $29 a month, that's harder.
Mm.
And this is why, like, when I went to look at Squarespace and Wix and thought to myself, do I want to try to bring Recapture over to these platforms here? Or do I want to try to do something on these platforms? You know how much they charge on Squarespace?
$9 a month.
Ooh, you're double what they start at.
Wow, really?
I'm not kidding. It's $4 a month. One of them, I don't remember if it was Wix or Squarespace, $4 a month to start out on this thing. And I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
And then I start looking at their app store. I'm pretty sure this is Wix. It might have been Squarespace, though. Gosh, I really wish I remembered this. But when I was looking through the app store and I was looking through other things, they had an e-commerce platform embedded into one of those. And its price was also $4 or $7 a month.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I suppose if you get 1,000 customers, this starts to get interesting. But then you have 1,000 customers that are asking you questions. And that is a whole lot of support for $4,000 or $7,000 a month. I mean, that is definitely a burden at that level. And I'm just scratching my head going, the only ones that seem to be benefiting from this are Wix and Squarespace themselves, because they must have something that is lowering their support burden with just a bunch of FAQs or whatever. Maybe they're ignoring support. I don't know. I'm not on the platform. I just don't see how they're getting the numbers on this and not dying in support at the same time.
That's very near to my heart, this kind of topic. I mean, we're seeing with Castos now, you know, we start at $19 a month now. And so we're seeing that, like, if we get a support query from somebody that takes, you know, me and our kind of support gal, Eileen, sometime, and we have to rope in a developer who's like, you know, $20, $30, $40, $50 an hour developer, like, that customer's lifetime value is shot for us, you know, pretty quick. Like, you know, our customer lifetime value is like $400 or $500. If we start spending a whole bunch of time on this customer, then they are costing us money. And so it's just like, how can we get around that? Part of it is just like making the customer more successful right from the beginning, you know? And so they don't have to come to us for support. And so that's like things like UI and UX and in-app documentation and stuff like that. But also just like making things more self-service for them and all this kind of stuff. Because I mean, yeah, once you get up to any decent number of customers and you're supporting them and it's not a $100 a month app where your lifetime value is in the thousands, you got to start thinking about that stuff. Like, at what point do you say to somebody, look, I'm sorry, this is just not working out, you know? And I'm sure those people have to say that. It's, I mean, but they're big venture backed companies, so maybe they don't, but as a bootstrapper, you have to kind of think about that stuff.
Yeah. I've never told a customer, well, is that true? Have I ever told a customer? I think I've maybe told one or two customers, this isn't working out. Let me just give you a refund, because it was obvious that they were just coming back to us. Like, they were underskilled, and I'm pretty sure they were plug-in customers. Yep. It's never been with Recapture, because Recapture is just considerably easier. It doesn't require developer level skills to get in and do stuff. But somebody was trying to customize the plugins, wasn't a developer, didn't know HTML, couldn't write CSS, didn't understand the WordPress API, and they just kept coming back asking us how to do this, how to do that, and we just kept saying, all right, here, look, you need to hire a developer for this. This is beyond the scope of support. Mm-hmm. And then they would get mad at us for saying this. We're like, so this is not, obviously there's an expectation mismatch here, and I don't really know how to work with that except for just giving you a refund and telling you to go find something that's a better fit. And I'm 100% certain that I let it go too long when I did that. Because this was quite a while ago, but you know, they would just keep going back and forth and back and forth. And I always thought, I'm just one ticket away from getting them to success. And the truth was, I wasn't.
Yep.
It just wasn't going to happen. They weren't a right fit for the platform. So I can smell that a little bit better now when somebody starts coming on and they ask a lot of questions about customizations. And then you poke back and say, all right, well, what are your skill sets? Do you have HTML and CSS, and can you do PHP and all these other, oh no, I'm non-technical, I can't code at all. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. This is probably not a good fit for you based on what I understand from past experience. So maybe you want to try one of my least favorite competitors over here.
We're pretty quick to say, if someone has a question like that, like I want to customize the podcast page on my website, we say, sure, no problem. Here's the documentation to send to your developer. And that either says to them, we can't help them do this themselves, or they need to go get help. This is not the point of the podcast today, but yeah, I mean, I think when you look at supporting, you know, larger numbers of customers, you have to draw the line sometimes. And I think about, like, you know, Drip is getting the bad rap these days for their support and stuff. And I feel for them because they have tens of thousands of customers probably. And the fact is, Drip can't do everything everybody wants it to do, right? And so, like, when you go to a support thing for them and you're like, hey, I want to do this, or why can't I do that? And they have to come to them and say, it just doesn't work like that. I'm sorry. And that sucks, but that's the reality of any. This is a long, weird tangent that we didn't plan on, but.
No.
I'm very happy that you are riding the wave of success with Recapture, and I hope it continues, and it continues to escalate higher and higher, because that's super cool, man.
I am very excited as well. Thank you for the kind words. I am looking forward to seeing how far this goes. So
yeah,
we will see.
Nice. Nice.
How about you? How are things?
Good. Good. So we are, I am in the US of A. We've been here for about a week and visiting family and spending lots of time at the beach, which is cool. Trying to get a fair amount of work done, which is challenging when you're traveling, but it's good. It's good. I posted this on Twitter a while back after kind of hinting at this in our last episode, one of our last episodes. So we're going to put together a retreat for SaaS founders, similar to like a Big Snow Tiny Comp thing without the skiing, but with the wine tasting and bike tours. And we're calling it SaaS Retreat. So if folks are interested, go to saasretreat.com. And there's just a little email thing. Drop it in there. We're shooting for the first week in December right now, but it may get pushed to sometime in January. And it'll be in Tuscany, so kind of around the Florence area of Italy. And yeah, looking for like 8 or 10 people, just 2 days of kind of talking SaaS and hanging out. So I am very excited about it. I've been very jealous the last 2 years of not doing Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe. But I don't know, for some reason, I just don't have product market fit, or I don't know how to market it. And I'm getting much more interest and engagement from this already. So I'm excited to try and put this together for somewhere around the end of the year, because it could be a lot of fun.
So what was your inspiration for doing the wine tour, aside from your enophilic tendencies here?
Everybody likes it. Not everybody. A lot of people like it. And I had a lot of people say about like the Big Snow Tiny Conf thing, I don't ski. Yeah, that sounds cool, but I don't ski. Or yeah, that's cool, but you know, I don't like to be cold. Or, you know, they live in Spain and they don't want to come up and be cold for a week or something like that. So I feel like this is a little more inclusive. People could potentially like bring their spouses and kind of do it a bit like that. So yeah, that's why we're making it not like a sport centric thing. And Tuscany is just really, really wonderful. It's like California. So yeah, I think that's why is we got a lot of people saying that sounds great, but I don't ski. So now we're doing a thing where you don't have to ski.
Nice. See, that's customer feedback right there. You did a bunch of customer interviews and you pivoted.
There you go.
Yep. I'm trying to fit as many buzzwords as I possibly can into this. But no, that's smart. I mean, if I was in a place here in Colorado where I could offer wine tours, let me tell you, we have some of the shittiest wine ever in the Colorado region. We actually do grow wine here. It grows on the Western Slope, but I've had it. It is not, you know, it's probably like 50 years away from being good just because they're still working on the vines and they're trying to dial in the making and all this stuff. And maybe eventually it'll get good, but it's not there today.
Yeah.
There's places that are trying to do the wine tasting thing, but the quality is not anywhere near what you get in California or anywhere in Europe, really.
Yeah.
So you have an opportunity to do something that's very unique and more inclusive, and it clearly is generating more interest. If we had something available to us here in Colorado, I might try to do that in the summer. But we don't, so I can't. Yep. And now I'm jealous of you, so that's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I signed up, I bought my ticket for MicroConf Europe today, so it will be in Dubrovnik, Croatia, the middle of October. So I'm very excited about going to King's Landing for MicroConf Europe. So, and then, you know, potentially we would have SAS retreat, you know, 2 months or so after that. So that's a pretty good mix, I think. Maybe, you know, pushing it out a little further to be like 3 months away or something like that will be cool. So, yep.
So between Rob and Mike, which one is Jaime and which one is Tyrion Lannister?
Oh my goodness, I will not answer that.
Yeah, neither of them. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the other big kind of news from my end is I'm sure everyone listening to the show has been kind of amused with the lack of traction we've gotten with Sales Camp in the last, gosh, Dave, almost year and a half. And I decided in the last week that it's just time for me to be done with it. And I am, I guess, officially now putting it up for sale. It is not making a ton of money. We're netting about $200 a month. So we do like $300 a month in MRR and have about $100 of expenses. And that's like 8 or 9 customers. So if anybody's interested in adopting a SaaS app that has, I think, a lot of the good bones, but definitely needs a fair amount of work, both on the technical side and on the marketing side, it's actually a good opportunity for somebody who wants to get in a little further than starting from something from scratch, but doesn't have the budget for buying a, you know, 6-figure SaaS app. I think, you know, for the right developer, it's in Ruby and Rails, for the right Rails developer, it's actually a pretty cool, prospect, but, that's not me and that's not the place I'm in. And I have other things that are successful and growing and I need to spend my time and effort and emotional energy and all that stuff, brain juice on the things that are working and not on something that's not working. So I'm at peace and excited and, you know, proud of myself for making this decision. I felt like I stuck it out long enough to really give it a try and it just isn't working for me. And so I'm moving on to other things. So,
wow, that's a huge announcement. I mean, you say that you're at peace with this, but you know, this is, it's a big thing to part with something that
failure.
You've worked with for so long. Well, but I mean, sure. Okay. There's some metrics that we could look at and say, yeah, you weren't successful with this. But at the same time, like, what were some of the things that you learned about this that you didn't know when you started?
That's a really long list.
That's what we should be focusing on here, because I think this is what levels you up for the next thing, right? You learn a bunch of cool things that you didn't know before. Like when I was going through all the stuff with Support Vine, I screwed up in so many unique, well, maybe not that unique, but I screwed
unique
up
to you in that situation. Yeah.
They were unique to me ways. And, you know, now with SaaS number 2, it's like, oh yeah. Okay. I'm not doing that again. So
So I'll say the things that I really like about the business, because I think it's important to, and those are the reasons I held on for so long. You know, one is it really is B2B. Everybody I'm talking to is a business owner of some sort. That's really cool relative to, and Podcast Motor, it's also like a B2B product I service, because all of my customers for Podcast Motor are business owners. So that's cool. So I can talk to them in that way. Castos is typically sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. A lot of kind of amateur hobbyists and things like that, which is cool because you get to have fun conversations with them, but you can't ever charge somebody $100 with Castos. So that's sure. Kind of like the limiting side of that business model. Everything else about it, I love. But with Sales Camp, I was like, you know, it has kind of natural expansion revenue built in because we were going to, and the new owner of it should charge like you are, Dave, on like, referred revenue. So like if you refer $100 or $1,000 or $10,000 a month, your Sales Camp bill will be kind of reflective of that. So it's essentially like a percentage of sales, but we do it in tiers. So that's like built in kind of automatically as your affiliate program is more successful, Sales Camp makes more money. That's really cool. I think people are pretty price insensitive in the B2B world. And this is the first downside of it, is it requires some level of integration into your website, which makes it really sticky. So once you integrate this thing in, just to switch to another affiliate marketing tool would just be a pain and much bigger kind of switching cost than a lot of people would want to do. This is also the downside. And this is by far the biggest downside, is you have to integrate in it Sales Camp into your site in two ways. One is like the tracking code, which is just like a Facebook pixel or Google Analytics, you know, JavaScript snippet.
Right, which is not that bad.
Which is cool. You can do that anywhere, even, you know, WordPress or Squarespace or Kajabi or whatever. The tough one is we also require for our Stripe integration to send a piece of metadata, which is like the unique identifier of the referrer. So we drop a cookie on your browser when you click a referral link, and then it has the identifier of the referrer. We pass that to Stripe to then kind of create the reward when there's a charge. You have to customize the call you make for the charge or the subscription to Stripe to include this metadata. So that cuts your available market down from everybody, basically, to everybody who can customize the code they send to Stripe, which we found cuts out pretty much all platforms. Because you can't, well, you can't just say to Kajabi, okay, Kajabi, I know that you have like Stripe has, like their kind of one-click Stripe integration, or Shopify, I mean. Shopify has like their little one-click Stripe integration, they white label Stripe, but you can't tell Shopify, okay, also send this one piece of information from the customer's browser to Stripe without like a custom Stripe Shopify plugin or WordPress plugin to integrate to the 872 membership sites or things like Phil Dirksen's, you know, WP Symbol Pay or any of these myriad of tools that people use. And that's really, I think, where I kind of got deflated, was saying like, if you're a SaaS app or a custom marketplace or something like that, for you to add this one piece of information and the code you send to Stripe is not hard. But if you're not, and you're using any other kind of rigid tool, it just doesn't work. Or you have to do like a lot more custom coding to get it to work. And so I looked at like, you got to start talking to different kinds of customers, maybe, you know, so only talk to SaaS applications. That's a possibility. Or develop all these integrations with all of the membership plugins for WordPress and a Shopify app and all this kind of stuff. And I was just like, I'm just not there, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty significant. That's no question about that. Gosh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Brutal. Okay.
So it's kind of tough because, I mean, there are massive players in this industry. I mean, this huge, you know, Ambassador was the biggest one, got sold to a private equity firm, which means it was, you know, $50 million or something like that. So that's a bummer because I looked at that for a long time and said, you know, this could be it, it being like the big thing. But then I also looked at, like, I have two other, like, very, very, very solid businesses that are growing and providing for my family and all this kind of stuff. And I don't need a third one that could be whatever, because I have two already that are good. So let's just go make them better. That's where I'm at peace, is that like, I don't need this other thing because I already have two that are working really well. And two is a lot. Three is way too much. So I'm very, in that respect, I'm very at peace with kind of what the future looks like.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know how you're feeling about sales camp in the, let's call it the transition phase here. When I basically came to that decision with SupportVine, you said I felt at peace. And I remember feeling, I felt that, but at the same time, I also felt like a sense of loss or sadness, because it was kind of like a part of me was going to go away. Like this thing now is going to die and I have to let it die and I have to be okay with that. So, there was definitely some sadness in there. Are you feeling that, or was that just me, having an inordinate level of attachment to my customer support snafu?
Yeah, I feel a little bit of that. And I guess, like, for good or bad, this is the first thing I've done that really didn't work in a long time. I had a couple of false starts before Podcast Motor, but Podcast Motor started, grew it, started doing really good. Serious Ismo Podcasting and Castos started it, grew it, it's doing good. And then Sales Camp, bought it, spent a ton of time and money and mental energy and worry and all this kind of stuff. And we have customers and it's profitable. So in that respect, it's not nothing, but it's not the same level of success as the other two. But I think what I look at, so I'm sad in that respect that I didn't make it work, but I'm more proud of myself for saying you don't need to have three businesses. And this one that didn't work out, it just didn't work out because you have these other two that are, whatever, doing really good. And I mean, the podcasting world, I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. Like maybe we're in the podcast bubble, but it's just not going to go away tomorrow, So I feel like the best thing for like me and my family and my mental well-being and financial success and all this kind of stuff is to, ride the horse that's going to be winning. And that just wasn't Sales Camp. So in that respect, I'm really excited about being able to focus more on Podcast Motor and on Castos because they are successful, growing, established businesses that are easier to grow than to take Sales Camp from $300 a month to $10,000 a month is a lot of work. But to take and double either of the businesses that I already have is like a lot less work,
Well, we would certainly hope so.
It's just a matter of time, really, right? I mean, they're already growing, so it's just like keep doing it,
Yeah, I mean, you double down on what's working, right? Stick with your strengths. Don't, I saw a tweet the other day that said, we focus a lot on trying to fix our weaknesses instead of doubling down on our strengths.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is kind of a case of that, right? So you were trying to bring Sales Camp up from this very small amount, raise it up from the ground. You had these other two things that were previous successes, well, current successes, not previous, but you're building them up, but at the same time, you're like, all right, I'm going to do this third one here. I'm going to bring it up too. But that was the weakest of the three businesses because it was the newest. It had some technical limitations as you eventually figured out. And doubling down on things that work is hard. And building up stuff from the ground is harder. Yep. We had this discussion the other day on the show where we basically said it's harder than ever to grow a SaaS, but it's easier than ever to start one up. And that's absolutely true. I think at any level, I mean, with Recapture, I've been sitting here for, how long have I had the Shopify thing at this point? Let's say a solid year. Yeah. It's been a year since I've integrated to Shopify. I didn't really see any traction in Shopify until October. And then it was slow until January. And now it's kind of picking up into a steadier pace. So, slow, steady growth, a slow SaaS ramp of death. It's not like the one thing shot me through the roof and jumped on the hockey stick and got me there.
Yep.
But by sticking with it and finding things that were like that and working and doubling down with like Carthook, which is basically doubling down on Shopify, that makes it easier to grow in that one spot there. So yeah, I'm with you on this.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, I'm excited. So we're going to start doing a lot more obviously like podcast centric things that can benefit both businesses. Going to start cross promoting the two businesses, which I've done literally zero of until now. Like we have a link on podcastmotor.com to Castos. But you know, I'm going to start doing, kind of joint marketing efforts between the two businesses and cross promoting between the lists and stuff like that, because they're both, they have decent audiences. So I'm excited about it.
They're very concentric audiences, I would say.
Yep. It's funny. Well, they are some of the audiences are really different. Some of them are similar. And Podcast Motor being more for the businesses, and Castos, some being for businesses, but some being for hobbyists. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think to be a little more careful with my terminology, I think the Venn diagram has reasonably overlapping circles. They're not touching. They don't have a tiny little area, but they aren't on top of each other either. So.
Yep. But a lot of the marketing things that I will do are similar tactics, but for slightly different types of people. So that's cool. Yeah.
So do you have segmentation built into these audiences at this point, or do you know how to segment them based on data that you have where you can focus on the business users and cross promote those? Because it sounds like that's kind of where you want to do.
No. No.
Okay. Well, there's an honest answer for you today.
No. So the easiest thing for us, and what you're asking is, can I pull out the kind of high-performing users from Castos and promote them to Podcast Promoter, because theoretically they have some sort of budget to pay for this stuff? Bingo. I can in downloads, because obviously we have all that information. We're just putting it in our autoresponder for once somebody converts to a paying customer. We have, 3 weeks worth of emails we send them, and it's going in one of those emails already. So.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, maybe some more work to do on that to try to double down. I was just thinking that now, so with my onboarding sequence of emails, I realized several episodes ago that I had a major weakness and I wasn't sending like a welcome email to the Shopify users. I fixed that, thank goodness, since. And all of the new ones are now seeing that. So, I mean, is that the one thing that fixed my onboarding and made everybody happier? I don't know. I have to look at the stats on that. I haven't gone back and looked at it. I'm sure it's probably helping. I'm sure somebody looked at it and was like, oh, that's a question that I had. And it probably answered that. But I now realize there's probably another place that I have a weakness in the onboarding, because I have a bunch of workflows that are triggered by certain events in the app. So it's things like, have they installed the Magento extension? Have they activated campaign? Have they recovered any revenue? Is the trial ending? You know, all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the recovered revenue one, I realized I could be doing more with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, all I do is I just congratulate them the very first time that they recovered revenue, which is great, because then they can start to see some ROI and then they're immediately aware, hey, they're actually making money for me. But at the same time, at the end of the trial, I had a thing in there, and I don't think I ever finished it, where there's a block that says, if you've recovered a certain level of revenue, then I put in like a more detailed thing that says, hey, this is how much we recovered for you. Don't miss out on this. And I have this nagging feeling that I never got that right, because I'm pretty sure I went back and forth with Drip support and found that there was something that we had to fix in our platform to do that. But now that we've got more customers that are coming in, and especially customers that are making money with recapture and making a decent amount of money in their stores, you kind of have to, like, I mean, one of the things that I would say I've really channeled from the Stelly FT talk at MicroConf is the whole follow up until they say fuck off or say yes. And, you know, there's definitely people that are not comfortable with that. And I didn't realize just how widespread it was until I ran an email marketing service. I mean, seriously, I see people like activating one campaign and they're leaving basically 100% of their recovered revenue on the table. Because everybody that does three recovers 100% in 100% more from emails two and three than they do on email number one. And so I'm thinking, well, why am I not doing that after the trial has ended and they haven't signed up? Like, if they've recovered revenue, I should be bringing that up again and again and again to get them to sign up, just automatically badger them. And then, of course, if they do sign up, then I need to take them out of that sequence right away so I don't piss them off. But I mean, I'm doing that manually right now, and it seems to be working. So it's one of those things that I was like, ah, damn it, I should do that. So, and I'm thinking maybe you want to do that with Castos. If you've got people that are showing a level of success, badger them more about podcast motor if you know that they're in that zone.
Yeah. Yep. I talked on the episode that where I interviewed David Hensel, a couple episodes ago about the book Traction. So the Geno Wickman book. So, and he has this thing, like this concept of like a scorecard. And for SaaS, it's really pretty easy because you have to like walk through the customer journey. So you're like website visits to like trial ratio and trial to conversion ratio and churn, all this kind of stuff. So I'm going through now, it's like the next thing I'm doing with Castos is saying like, okay, benchmark all of my numbers there versus what is good, and then start picking out the whatever lowest performing metric and work on it for a while. And along with this is going to be kind of more information that we get about how the website performs and how customers perform in their trials and things like that, so that we can do things like customize our onboarding for the Castos customers to be more successful, but also then we can pull out and send it to Podcast Motor to say, hey, this person, you know, doesn't have a gmail.com account. Maybe they're a good fit. Or, you know, their show has 5,000 downloads in an episode. They're probably sponsored or whatever, and, you know, have money to pay for a service like Podcast Motor. So we're just, the whole thing with like moving on from Sales Camp is just more mental space to think about this shit. Because before, whatever, 20% of my brain was just over here in this, you know, attending to this fledgling little thing that wasn't going anywhere. Now that I don't think about that anymore, really, I have more space to think about and implement all these other things that are going to make both businesses so much better. So I'm, in that respect, I'm super pumped.
Well, congratulations and my condolences all at the same time.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a party at the funeral.
It's a party at the funeral. There you go.
Yep. Yep. So I have to say, if anybody hasn't read this book, have you read it, Dave? Traction?
You're not talking about the one from Gabriel Weinberg.
No, right. So there's two Traction books. It's the guy's name is Geno Wickman. And it is like the thing he kind of teaches is the entrepreneur's operating system, the EOS. And so it's all like just how to run your business. It's not like all this marketing stuff or sales or anything like that. But it's just like, how do you run a business that has transparency and accountability and data and organization and communication and all this kind of stuff. And it is just so wonderful. Like, I've heard folks like Eric Sue talk about it and like, you know, I wish I had this book when I started out kind of stuff. And it's great, man. I read it for the third time on the plane over here, and I read it and then I would stop like a chapter in and then like do the worksheet that he gives with that goes along with it to fill out things like mission and vision and goals. And so we're going to start communicating those to our teams. And yeah, it's just like, I'll say this in the most mature way possible. It's like growing up as a business owner. Because like, this is stuff that if you're going to build a 7 or 8 figure business, you got to do this stuff. And so we're starting to do this stuff, you know, on hopefully our path towards those kind of levels.
Yeah, no, I haven't read this yet. It's on my extensive list here. I was looking through it and I was like, oh yeah, there's a second Traction book. And I forgot about this one. But yeah, because you had mentioned it to me before.
Yeah.
But I will definitely bump it to the top of the list if you are feeling like it's that valuable. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's not a light read. It's a light read, but then you have to go implement it. So you read it again. And like I did on the plane, like you read it and you stop and you do the work and you know, you get all the stuff in place. And it's more of a reference material than like, you know, a novel or, you know, a biography or something.
Yeah. Well, I've got a plane trip coming up next week, so I'll jump onto Amazon Prime today and get the paper copy. For some reason, I just can't do the e-reader stuff. It never sticks the same way as it does with a paper copy for me. So I'm very old school antiquated in that regard. But
this book in particular is a very good one to get in paper. So I had it in Kindle, read it, and then knew I needed to reference stuff, and that's the worst with like an e-reader. So I bought it in paper as well, so that I could like, you know, highlight shit and earmark the pages and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, good, because that's what I love to do. So, all right, yeah, yep. Definitely. All right, I'll be doing that as soon as we're off the episode.
Nice.
All right, and if you have any thoughts or questions for Craig about shutting down Sales Camp, or maybe you want to take it off his hands, send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. Would love to hear from you. Also, our usual ask. If this has been valuable for you and you think somebody else would benefit from it, please share our podcast with them and let us know what they think. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.